is Jo Van Cool, welcoming you to another programme of Animates. And today, we're going to look at everything from an animal's perspective, rather than the person who owns the animal, because the animal needs to be thought of in times of need as well. We are very lucky today to have a veterinary scientist working for the Victorian branch of the Australian Veterinary Association, and she is a behavioural therapist. And she'll talk quite a bit about what animals do for people in terms of therapy for various conditions. Lovely to talk to you, Dr. Jackie Lee. Do you think this is because animals are non-judgmental? They're sort of passive acceptors of people with problems.
Yes, the thing is that because the species that we tend to keep as companion animals, so dogs and cats especially, they only have the reasoning ability of about a two-year-old child. And it's very important that we don't think of them as being childlike. They are actually adult animals and behave in an adult manner. It's just that their reasoning is limited to the here and now and what affects them. So they're not able to think forward or to remember backwards. And the thing is that, yes, they can be very trusting. They can be very accepting. So, you know, your dog doesn't care that you're not a size 8 and don't look like a supermodel. They don't have that value judgment that we as people carry with us, you know. So that means that, you know, your dog or your cat or your parrot, they just see you. And if you make them feel good, then they're going to want to be around you. There's no pretending. If you make them feel scared or frightened or excessively worried or you're aggressive towards them, they'll go, nope, you don't make me feel good. I don't want to be here. So that does make them very accepting because there's no pretending. They either think that you're okay or you're not.
Is this not often a mistake people make, that they think of an animal sort of anthropomorphized into a human body and so tend to regard animals as merely in disguise as humans, if you know what I mean, which is what they're not. They are animals, and it's sometimes people don't quite get that. It's very easy trap to fall into, to see your dog as a little boy or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it is something that is very easy to do, and for the bulk of it, it doesn't actually lead to poor welfare for the animals. Where they run into trouble is when their behaviour is normal for animals but goes against what we think. So in our culture, big people are not allowed to hurt little people, all right? Adults are not allowed to hurt children. Young people are not allowed to hurt elderly people, okay? So we look after the vulnerable members of the community. Now, that doesn't apply for dogs. So if a big dog is being bothered or is worried about the actions of a little dog, they will respond to the little dog like it is another dog, which it is. But of course, we go, oh my goodness, that's not how you're supposed to behave, because we don't, as a big person, we don't belt up on littler people. So that can be very confusing for the animals, and it means that they can be getting in trouble for something that they have no concept about. The other time where it runs into trouble for the animals is the concept of guilt and morality. Animals don't have any ethics or morals, so they don't have a cultural or a personal code of what is right or wrong. We don't walk up and punch people in the face because that is not a pleasant thing to do. There's no need to do it. It's something that our ethics and our morals say we don't do.
Yeah.
We don't rob people, etc. But animals don't have that. So if one dog has something that another dog wants and the first dog says, well, I'll fight you for it, that's how it works in the dog world. They'll take the birthday cake off the bench and not say sorry for doing it. That can also be very confusing for people.
I had experience of a dog that had been maltreated, and it was beautiful with people. It was fine. But yep. If another dog tried to take something that it thought was his, he would just go for that other dog more than once. I had to pay for stitches to be inserted into another dog. I suppose what I'm really asking is, do you think that maltreatment does make a dog generally more aggressive if it doesn't get what it wants?
maltreatment won't necessarily cause an increase in aggression. The expression of aggression can be affected by many things. Aggressive behaviour, its goal is to put distance between the individual being aggressive and the thing that they're worried about. And it might be that I want something scary or dangerous to go away. It might be something that I perceive as dangerous or scary to go away. Or it might be that I want someone else to go away because I've got something that I value with me and I would feel better if everybody else moved away. And the thing is that people do the same sort of thing, but because we do it with words and dogs do it with their teeth, that's where we run into conflict sometimes. But if an animal has been generally maltreated, some of them will get through it, just like some people are resilient and can bounce up and still be smiling from the most atrocious events in their life. And other people find it very hard to keep going. So there's a personal sort of quality of resilience. And then there's the genetics as to whether or not you're someone who's happy to get in there for a fight or an individual who's more inclined to be a bit more passive or avoidant of fighting. So all of those things will come together. But certainly an environment that is not supportive, doesn't encourage the development of resilience, where there may actually be active abuse, that is going to affect how a brain develops in any animal and will affect how that individual behaves in the future.
Yes, and of course, dogs and cats, they have their own language, if you like. They talk to each other in a way that we can't understand. I've been reading a bit about how their tails say things, and you know, I watch my cat's tails very carefully to see if I can work any conversation out. It's very hard. Now, I got interested in you and your organization because I read about the Manchester University research discovering how animals are helpful with people with mental issues of any kind, specifically schizophrenia, or was it other mental issues as well?
I think it was just schizophrenia. I'm not a human psychiatrist or psychologist at all. I work only in the veterinary sphere with animals. So the thing that I can look at is the viewpoint of the animal and the animal's welfare.
Both sides are actually really interesting.
The thing is that the people with schizophrenia stated that the animal distracted them from their symptoms and their upsetting experiences, such as hearing voices or suicidal thoughts. So the animals help the people stay grounded in reality, and that's often how assistance and service animals who work with people with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, work. So what they do is, just by their being present, they give the people something to connect with, to touch, to interact with, that helps them stay present in the moment and not get carried off by their psychiatric symptoms.
Now, One of the things I wanted to ask you, I presume that you thought that the Manchester findings were relevant to people in Australia.
As far as I understand, we've got a couple of different classifications. So we have service animals. So they're animals like the guide dogs and the hearing dogs, and there are some other organisations that produce service dogs. So these animals are highly trained to act as an extra pair of eyes or ears or limbs for a person. And there's always new groups or classes being developed. And I think that we need to be stopping and really thinking about this a bit carefully. And then we have assistance animals, which that's much the grey area as far as I understand. And where those animals fit in terms of accompanying their owners on public transport and into public places is a little bit difficult because they're not given the same status as the service dogs, like the guide dogs. And then everybody recognises the guide dog when it's in harness. We leave it alone. We understand that the puppies need to go through training and be out in public. We also know that they are allowed into all areas where people go. But also, first responders, so police, ambulance, they also know that if there's a problem, they can ring the organisation that trained and also in most cases still owns the dog. So there's process in place for emergencies for these animals. The problem with the assistance dogs, because they don't have the same status, is that it's not clear what's supposed to happen with these animals in emergencies and should they be allowed on public transport. And somebody's travelling with a dog to help with their autism, they have an event where they get frightened and are not coping, what then happens to that dog? So it's all those questions need to be worked out to really let these dogs.
It does seem to be a very sort of grey area, actually. I've had a few interviews with people who are having trouble in the sense that the law doesn't necessarily regard their assistance dogs. Those sorts of issues seem to be grey areas that need to be sorted out for people, I think.
The other thing that needs to be sorted out for assistance animals is what animals can be assistance animals. Dogs certainly work very well within our community as assistance animals, but there are people who are claiming that their cat is their assistance animal. Now, that's fine, except that cats tend to be very territorial. They don't like to move around. They don't like to leave their territory. So expecting this cat to accompany you on shopping expeditions, to work, to fly on an aeroplane, to go on holidays, that is actually not good for the animal's welfare. So I think what we have to do as a community is say, yes, there are situations where these animals can be very, very helpful for people, but who's looking after the animals? Who's actually saying to these animals who don't have a choice whether or not they're given this career? And with a lot of assistance animal organisations, you supply the animal. So the dog that you choose may not be suitable as an assistance animal. And that's where the guide dogs and the hearing dogs, the service dogs, they have programs in place to either breed their own or very careful selection processes that say these dogs from the shelters will be fine for hearing dogs. But if I just went down to the puppy shop and said, right, I need an assistance animal, I choose this puppy, that may not be a suitable animal. And then we also have what species is a suitable animal to act as an assistance animal, and then how do we monitor these animals for their welfare? So not just their physical health, but it's very, very hard to work as an assistance or a service animal because guide dogs are expected to wait quietly for their handlers to be ready for them. So if they're at work, they're expected to just wait until the owner needs to be guided somewhere. Assistance animals are often being used by people with mental health disorders. That's really, really hard for an animal to live with. It's very hard to live with to be a person living with someone who has a mental health disorder that affects the way that they see the world and respond to the world. And that's adults who can understand what is happening. So when we ask an animal to do that job, and the animal has no choice but to take up that job, that's when we really need to stop and say, right, we need to be very careful here.
Do you get any chance to talk to people along these lines? Is there any education outlet for people to understand this? Because I think perhaps a lot of people don't understand that you have to be very careful.
There aren't any formal areas, and of course it's very feel-good stuff, and that concerns me because when it's feel-good stuff, it's very, very hard to say, excuse me, hang on a second, is this really what we should be doing? The thing is that with some of the dogs that help people with autism, well, especially children who are struggling to make sense of a world that doesn't make sense to them, who are maybe having tantrums or fleeing from their carers, their dog is expected to sort of help with that. But, you know, it's a very special dog who can put up with noises and being yelled at and be soothing and calming towards an individual that everything in a sensible dog would be saying, stay away from this individual. So I think it's a very, very important question that we need to be asking, but I don't think that there's anywhere formally, to my knowledge, that is asking those questions.
Which is a shame because it seems to me that while we all understand that pets or animals can be really beneficial to people with problems, disabilities of one kind or another, we're not always looking at how the animal feels about all that.
Well, that's true of any animal that does a job for us, be it a dog that's living as a pet or a racehorse or a chicken that's producing eggs or an animal that's helping somebody with a mental health problem or a physical disability. I think that everywhere we need to be saying, is this animal having the best life it can and is it enjoying this work that we're asking it to do? The animals that I see in private practice who have mental health problems themselves, that's often one of the things that we're discussing with owners is how can we help your pet feel safe and comfortable so that they can do their job, which is to be a companion for you.
A lot of publicity is needed around this, really, isn't it?
This is not a witch hunt or, we shouldn't be doing this. But I think, yes, we need people to be sitting down and seriously looking at this stuff. We need some rules in place so that organisations can't just spring up and declare that they are now producing a assistance dog, you bring the dog and we'll charge you several thousand dollars to train the animal. Well, hang on a second, are there any frameworks so that when your animal comes out that it has actually been trained to a standard, just like you don't want just anybody producing a police dog or anybody producing a guide dog? We want to know that there are standards, and that's one of the reasons why guide dogs have a protected status, is that the organisations that train these animals and then put them out into the community have spent a long time working out exactly what a guide dog will do and working out the steps that will happen in the event of emergencies, or hang on a second, this dog's not performing the way it should be. We know that guide dogs have definite times when they work and times where they are just being a dog, the same way that you and I go to work and come home. Some of these dogs that are working with people with mental health disorders and things like epilepsy, seizure alert dogs, they are never off.
That's right. That's right.
And so that becomes, you know, a 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days of the year job. And if it is separated from its handler, they become distressed, a lot of them, because I'm meant to be with my handler all the time. We have to sort of say, well, is that actually fair to do to an animal? Should it be mandated that they will work for this long and then they have to have a break? We have those rules for other animals, like animals that are used in zoos. You're only allowed to handle the animal for this long and then it has to have a break. Should we be looking at rules like that for these animals that are expected to do a job that you would not get a person to do?
That's right. No, not 24/7 anyway.
No.
There's so much that our listeners are interested in to do with animals and how they help people and how people can look after their animals so that they, the people, have the best outcomes.
Yeah. And my experience with people who have assistance animals and service animals is they really love the animal and value the work that it does with them. So I think that it's not about the individual relationship. I think the ones that I've met have all been fabulous. It's about making sure that the rules that govern how those relationships will be used are there, and that we craft the welfare of both parties. It's quite an interesting area, and I think the more people talk about it, the better.
And thank you very much for giving your time. That's been Mark.
That's right, my pleasure. Thank you.
Bye now. Confusion about assistance dogs for our listeners, here is a little bit from the Australian Human Rights Commission website. An assistance animal is a trained support designed to facilitate the participation of people with disability in accessing various aspects of personal and public life. They are sometimes mistaken as a pet, but provide an essential function for some people with disability. The Disability Discrimination Act 1992, in Section 9, sets out the legal definition of an assistance animal as a dog or other animal that A. is accredited under a state or territory law to assist a person with a disability to alleviate the effects of disability, or B. is accredited by an animal training organisation prescribed in the regulations, or C. is trained to assist a person with a disability to alleviate the effect of their disability and meet standards of hygiene and behaviour that are appropriate for an animal in a public place. Variation among states and territories regarding accreditation and regulation of assistance animals will continue to present a range of issues for people with disability who use assistance animals to access the community. Examples of the situation in each jurisdiction is set out. An assistance animal permit is required for access to public transport. However, guide dogs and hearing dogs do not require a permit. The permit must be renewed annually. You have been listening to Animates. This program has been recorded in the studios of 2RPH Sydney for the RPH Network. Our technical producer is Katie Brooks. Research is by Joseph Swanser. And I'm Jovan Cool saying goodbye for now.